My name is Harold Covington, and I'm the public spokesman for the Northwest Front, which is a movement to establish a sovereign and independent homeland for all white people here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm going to talk to you today about one of the most important subjects that we in the Northwest, and indeed white revolutionaries everywhere, have to deal with, and that is our relationship with white American conservatives. Now, I don't mean established neocons or talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck. I mean real white people, grassroots conservatives, Tea Party types, from whom we will be drawing a very large number of our recruits here in the Northwest Front. Both we on the radical end of things and they on their end need to understand who we both are, the nature of the situation we face, and why we need one another's help. Now, first off, what are we talking about here? Now, Commander Rockwell once said, "A National Socialist is someone who is concerned about his race. A conservative is only concerned about his money." Now, that pretty much hits the nail on the head. Not just National Socialism, but Christian identity and all kinds of genuinely revolutionary white concepts are concerned with race, with the effect of race on every issue from culture to religion to politics to science, not just economics. Race is the American issue, and has been since Columbus first landed on that Caribbean island and chucked his flagpole into the sand on the beach. The basic issue of whose land this is. An American conservative, by definition, will have certain social issues on his agenda, like abortion or school prayer or whatever, and most likely he's against gun control, but the fact remains that primarily he simply doesn't want to be taxed in order to support non-white minorities with black and brown skins. He has to work. He never had anything given to him in his life, and so he doesn't see why people with black and brown skins should get a free ride on his back. Now, we're often reminded that our ancestors revolted against Britain over a simple tax on tea, and while that's a great oversimplification of the situation in 1776, it's close enough for our purposes. Now, it's humanly understandable, of course. Nobody likes paying taxes, but to view life through any economics-only perspective is essentially a Jewish construct. I remember what I've said in the past about the essence of the Jewish worldview being pure materialism, not spiritual, not political, not moral, and frankly not human. You also need to understand that in the American context, there are several different kinds of conservatives. Now, the two that we need to be concerned with right now are what's known as paleoconservatives and neoconservatives. Paleoconservatives are your old red, white, and blue Pat Buchanan and Sam Francis types. They believe in limited government, states' rights, strict construction of the Constitution, and unrestricted free enterprise, your basic laissez-faire capitalism. Now, these are the guys who would have been right at home during the presidency of William McKinley in 1900. The neoconservatives are basically Jews pretending to be conservatives, people like Irving Kristol and the whole Gubu Jew crew who took over the White House for 8 years when Jugears Bush was president. The spiritual founder of neoconservatism, in fact, was a Jewess named Ayn Rand, whose real name was Elisa Rosenbaum. Neoconservatives also include the Christian Zionist Right, your Pat Robertson 700 Club types. I think most of you listening to this will be sufficiently familiar with what I'm talking about, so I don't have to go off into a long spiel about who's what and why and all the details. You can get all that info from other sources. But the conservatives who concern us here in the Northwest are not these ideological guru types from the think tanks who argue about how many mattoids can dance on the head of a pin. They're part of the establishment. The ones we need to be concerned with are those who are not part of the establishment. The ordinary white people who emerged from these town hall meetings and tea parties back in 2009, and who have since been more or less absorbed into the mainstream Republican Party, but who are still out there. They represent something that has not been seen in this country for a long time, not really since the Wallace for President campaign in 1968. They are, or were, a genuine grassroots movement of white resistance against the tyranny from Washington, D.C., mostly against the forced imposition of socialized medicine in the form of Obamacare. But also because more and more white Americans have come to realize that somehow, they're not sure how, a ghastly mistake was made on November the 4th, 2008, and there are now people ruling them who do not have their best interests at heart, and who want to rob them and take away their freedom in ways that they would never have believed possible before. I refer to all these conservative white people as Tea Partiers because it's a convenient handle. although many of them have probably never attended one of these Tea Party meetings or rallies at all. They're very uneasy and upset about the way that the country and the government in Washington, D.C. are moving, but they are still expressing themselves mostly in economic terms, at least in public. The racial undertone is definitely there, though, because for the first time ever, government oppression now has a black face in the form of Obama. Now, this has brought about a very subtle change in conservatism, in that it's no longer quite so forbidden to mention or at least hint at race. The liberal media jump all over anyone who does bring it up, of course, but I don't think that's having the same effect it used to have. It's quite obviously just a ploy to shut people up by designating any criticism of Obongo and the Democrats as racism. And it's so obvious that I think it really just pisses people off and makes them much less susceptible to running and hiding under the bed when someone utters the word racist, and that's a very encouraging development. Now, what's really going to open the can of worms is the next two items on the Democrat agenda after Obamacare, which is the beginning of gun confiscation through various attempts to create a national gun registry database through the back door, and especially so-called immigration reform. In other words, amnesty for the 25 to 30 million or so illegal aliens now unlawfully residing in North America, mostly Hispanic mestizos. The object is to legalize them, get them on the voters' rolls, and create an artificial Democrat majority so that we will become essentially a one-party totalitarian state, kind of like Mexico was under the PRI for about 70 years. At the time I'm recording this, we're dealing with something called the Gang of Eight bill in the Senate, but however that turns out, I think from now on it's going to be almost impossible to keep race out of the immigration discussion. But still in all, the fact is that most of the Tea Party people and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck listeners who comprise this growing grassroots movement of white resistance are in it for economic reasons and because their own economic ox is being gored, and many of them are out of work, and more will be as the months and years of the Obama Depression roll on. 8% official unemployment is now the quote-unquote new normal, but government statistics are notoriously falsified. The real unemployment figure has been as high as 20% for white males in the past couple of years. There has been no real recovery ever since Obama was, elected, if that's the word, back in 2008, and the only place in the country that's economically booming is Washington, D.C. and its suburbs. Ordinary white people are finally starting to pay attention to what's going on around them. Now, they can see that something is very badly wrong, and they're starting to get a few vague glimpses and flashes of inspiration in their minds as to what. People like Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are giving them a little bit of the story in very diluted form. But these Tea Party types, I think, sense that there's a lot more that they're not being told. I imagine that the reluctance of the establishment conservative types to come to grips with immigration is a dead giveaway. Bear in mind, organized conservatism serves the Republican Party, and the Republican Party serves capitalism. And it's capitalism that's brought the 30 million illegal aliens here. The main defect of these people's outlook is that they have almost no idea about the Jews or the ramifications of the Jewish question, and most of them either think Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, or else all they know about Jews comes from watching that stupid movie Fiddler on the Roof. That's going to be one of our main roles in the coming years, to somehow bring these people to an awareness of the Jewish aspect of their problems. Now, when Glenn Beck was fired from Fox News after he took on Jewish billionaire George Soros by name, that was a serious glimpse into the Jewish question, which I think a lot more people than we may imagine picked up on, even if everybody's still afraid to utter the forbidden J word out loud. Now, the biggest problem of all is that grassroots Tea Party types still believe that the system can be salvaged. They still believe in traditional electoral politics. They still believe that they can vote their way out of their problems. During the 2012 elections, the Tea Party was successfully absorbed into the Republicans to prevent them from striking out on their own politically, and we all know what good that did. There's not much point in running elections if the Democrats are simply going to steal them through vote fraud no matter what. So long as white people are mentally and spiritually trapped in these outdated and archaic forms of political thought, so long as they're unable to think outside the electoral box, so long as they still believe that the solution lies in pulling a lever in a booth for some guy in a suit, then there will never, ever be any real change in this society. There's simply no point in holding elections if there are no candidates who represent the white man's racial interests, and these Tea Party people need to be made to see that. Always remember, the primary purpose of democracy is to prevent change, to ensure that actual state power is always held and retained by the same class or group of people, even if different individuals are sitting behind the desk in the Oval Office. Democracy is one of the most brilliant and effective forms of mass deception ever devised. The mighty Wizard of Oz with smoke and noise and mirrors, and pay no attention to that little hook-nosed man behind the curtain. As long as conservatives and Tea Partiers and Ron Paulites and whoever refuse to acknowledge the issue of race and remain ignorant of the Jewish question, then they will never be able to effect any kind of change, and things will keep on getting worse and worse until the white race becomes extinct about a century from now. Now let's get down to the nitty-gritty of the basic differences between revolutionaries and conservatives in the context of white America, and why it is so absolutely essential that the white resistance movement develop a radical separatist tendency, specifically the Northwest Front, and why we need to persuade conservatives to change their thinking and change their behavior. Now the fact is that we have tried conservatism, and it doesn't work. Everything from Wallace for president to the John Birch Society to Reaganism to Ron Paulism, and none of it has had any lasting effect or produced one jot of genuine change. Not once in the past 60 years has the empowered liberal and Jewish elite establishment been forced to change their behavior in any significant way or to abandon one destructive and anti-white policy. In America, the essence of conservatism is learning to lose like a gentleman. For the past 60 years, the overwhelming majority of white people involved in right-wing and racial causes have not been revolutionaries, nor for that matter have they even been particularly radical. What most of the Tea Party people are is what's known as reactionaries. They are reacting to conditions of life in Obama's America, which are going to get worse. They are reacting as human beings naturally do to insult, oppression, and injury. They are lashing out in anger and hate at their tormentors. Now, this is entirely understandable, but personal economic grievance and racial resentment are not a political program or a worldview. The uncomfortable truth is that if times were to get better and gas were to drop below $2 a gallon, and these people were given back their $100,000 per year jobs and their SUVs and their McMansions, then 98% of them would vanish from politics like the morning dew as the sun rises and go back to wallowing in the trough. Few of them, and few enough of us, have sufficient geopolitical education and intellectual depth to analyze an entire economic, political, and social system and realize that it is evil to the core. We're not Europeans. That kind of thing is too faceless and too abstract for us. We Americans like our politics like we like our fast food burgers, cased in styrofoam, loaded with cholesterol and additives that'll kill us, and smothered in fattening condiments and sauce. We don't want to do anything that requires too much analysis and thought. Americans don't like to think too much. It hurts our heads. Indeed, we've never been taught to think at all. We've been taught to feel, and that's not the same thing. So American conservatives, and even a lot of the less advanced movement types, take the easy way out. We focus on individual issues like Obamacare, or in our own movement, we focus on one of the minority groups that we particularly despise, or on a single issue like guns or abortion or the Federal Reserve, whatever, and we don't worry about the system which has created this living hell from the ground up. Now, the Tea Partiers badmouth Obama and Nancy Pelosi, but not the system that forced Obama and Pelosi on them in the first place. A lot of us in the so-called racial right hate the niggers or spicks or Jews or faggots, and we never stop to think how and why they got to be where they are and doing what they're doing. Guys, there are only two real issues confronting us today. What the Jew is doing, and why we are letting him do it. That's what we have to understand, and that is what we have to make these Tea Party conservatives understand. Neither of our movements particularly love those of our own race, as witness the Tea Partiers' desperate and futile attempts not to be portrayed as wicked racist and Nazis in the media by grabbing every nigger that wanders through one of their meetings and shoving him up on the podium saying, see, here's a black man, we're not racist, no, Mr. Bill, we're not racist. And then there's the long string of white people that most of us movement types revile and attack for religious or ethnic or cultural reasons. We just hate people who are different from us. And most of this hatred is born out of personal frustration, disappointment, loss of job or home, or terrible immediate injury at the hands of minorities. And not that these reasons for becoming politically involved are necessarily invalid, since genuinely spiritual and ideological human beings who can actually reach a philosophical or political position by thought have always been quite rare. Such personal reasons, as I just cited, are most likely always going to constitute the majority of the motivations of people involved in any political movement. When a white man loses his job because of affirmative action, when he has his home foreclosed on, when he has a loved one butchered by niggers or a child dragged into drugs and race mixing by the filthy Judaic culture, or when he's victimized by our vile court system in some way, or when his daughter presents him with a mulatto grandchild, or when his son can't get into college because of the racial quotas, and when this white man is forced into daily contact with buggery and third world filth, and when he watches a loved one stripped bare of a lifetime of work and savings because they or someone in their family were so unfortunate as to get sick, now these are powerful motivations for wanting to attack the system, which allows these things to happen. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with them. But the overwhelming majority of white people who are involved in right-wing and racial causes and grouplets do not want genuine systemic change. They don't want to change the system. They want revenge on the system, and that's not the same thing. They get involved hoping to right their personal wrongs, not their people's wrongs. Now, that may be humanly understandable, but it will take us only so far. I put another way, most of us don't really want to change every aspect of America from top to bottom and turn it into something new. Most of us, if the truth be known, probably don't even see that much wrong with the system itself. We prefer the devil we know. What we really want is for the existing system to work right, meaning work for us personally. We want the system to give us our props, as the Whiggers say. We want the existing order to keep its promises. We don't want to overthrow the establishment, we just want our share. We want the American dream, which has been promised to us all our lives and which has not been delivered by Barack Hussein Obama. We want everything to be the way that it was, or we think it was, in some far-off, dimly perceived, idyllic past in the time of abundance. Now, for my generation, it's the 1950s, with Bobby Sox and Ozzie and Harriet and Rock Around the Clock. For many of you, it will be the 1960s or the 1970s. Okay, in a way, I can kind of get the nostalgia for the 60s, although I was there, and I can tell you, the 60s weren't all that they've cracked up to be, but I was really freaked back a long time ago when that stupid TV series, that 70s show came out. I mean, nostalgia for the 70s? Jimmy Carter? Disco? Give me a break. Anyway, I'm wandering here. What most white people really want out of all this is the good things in life that we have now or that we used to have or that we've been socially conditioned to want. We want the money and the shiny high-tech toys. We want the SUVs and the football games on TV. We want the backyard barbecue and the vacations at the beach and the lake. We want the family trips to Six Flags with screaming kids in the back of the SUV. We want that good old-time religion that we learned at our mother's knee. We want mom and God and apple pie. We want the old red, white, and blue and hot dogs and fireworks on 4th of July. We want politicians and preachers in expensive suits to come on TV and tell us everything is fine and we can enjoy ourselves without feeling guilty or worrying about anything. And of course, we want the beer. Gotta have that cold brewski in the fridge. And at the same time, we want to have none of the bad things of Obama's America. No crime, no drugs, no niggers, no Mexicans, no filthy faggots, no feminist bitches, no lawyers, no scummy street corner lefties, no liberal talking heads on TV, no non-white faces on the tube or in the stores with noise coming out of those holes in their faces. And we want everyone around us looking and thinking like ourselves. We want to live among our own kind. My God, what a horror. And conservatives think that this is somehow possible. But it isn't. They think that somehow we can vote ourselves this wonderful imaginary world if we just believe the right politician in a suit and a $200 haircut, but we can't. There will be no return to the time of abundance. We can't click our heels three times and say, there's no place like home, there's no place like home. There is no Kansas to go back to. There's no Oz either. The Wicked Witch has taken over. The Scarecrow's OD'd, the Tin Man was stolen by Puerto Ricans and chopped down for parts, and the Munchkins are butt-fucking each other on the yellow brick road. We are living in a nightmare, and we will not wake up from it. History's clock moves forward, not backward, people. The old America that we grew up in is gone forever. There is no going back. We have to figure out how we're going to move forward. Now, the first thing that both we and the conservatives must rid our minds of is this idea that somehow we're going to be able to take back the entire United States of America. If there is to be any hope for any kind of survival on this continent for white people and for the Western civilization we've created, then it lies in some form of secession, of territorial imperative. Listen very carefully, people. Read my lips. We will never be able to take back the entire United States and make it what it once was. That ship sailed back in 1958 when Eisenhower ordered the troops into Little Rock, and we did not take the guns out of the closet and resist by force. We have left it too late. We and our movement screwed around for 60 years and wasted our time on dead-end leaders and dead-end ideas, and yes, I include myself in that indictment. There is nothing left to take back. It's gone. There are simply too many of them and not enough of us. We are a minority now. Why can you not get your arms around that? There are too many niggers, too many Mexicans and other illegals. There are too many booger boys and carpet munchers. There are too many white women who have been damaged beyond repair by feminism and who will never produce white children. There are too many liberal left-wing dumbasses who vote for Barack Hussein Obama. There are too many pale-skinned dumbasses of our own race who are hopelessly brain-dead and who can't be reached because their minds and their thought processes have been destroyed by the televisions and the personal computers and the thousands and thousands and one lies of the Jews. In order to restore any semblance of the old USA, we would have to kill or forcibly expel from the North American continent at least 100 million people. The largest act of ethnic cleansing in history. We would have to put Genghis Khan and Stalin to shame. Really? We're going to do that? Right. So just how are we going to do that? All you guys out there who send me emails telling me that I'm wrong and we mustn't engage in secession, that we have to infiltrate and take over the Republicans, whatever the hell, explain to me how this is going to happen. The military? Is some general suddenly going to develop a conscience and stage a coup and drag Obama's baby shit brown ass out of the White House and Pelosi's skanky diseased carcass out of the Capitol, and then he'll turn his troops loose on the Mexicans and drive them out? Now, even if some general in the Pentagon did give such an order, would he be obeyed? Who do you think makes up the rank and file of the United States military these days? Do you think white people are going to just simultaneously rise up and throw all this garbage out of the country? Who? Who's going to do that? A bunch of middle-aged men with big bellies who spend their time emailing news media articles to one another, telling each other how bad things are, and throwing hissy fits in the comment sections of quasi-intellectual blogs? Who's going to do that? A bunch of old people in their wheelchairs and their walkers who just don't want to pay their taxes? Who is going to do all this? Young white punks, losers, and slackers who do nothing except sit around listening to rap music, play their Game Boys, and live with their mothers until they're 30? And are white people as a whole fit to do this, in any sense of the word, should the spirit ever move them to do so? How many white males today can even run up a flight of stairs? Granted, a lot of white people still own firearms, which they keep in their closet, quietly rusting away. But do they know how to use them in an actual military situation? No, they don't. I've seen real war, and I can tell you right now, no, they don't. This won't be a movie, you know, when a couple of Generation Xers and bimbos in tank tops shoot zombies for an hour on film and then ride off into the sunset on motorcycles or whatever. Guys, this Take Back All of America for White People thing, not happening. We had damned well better start thinking up another plan. Oh, wait, we have one. It's called the Northwest Imperative. how we have been raised from birth with the idea of one nation indivisible under God, which is codswallop. Nowhere is it chiseled in stone by God or anyone else that the North American continent absolutely must be politically united into one national entity for all eternity until the crack of doom. Manifest destiny is horse dung. History and human reality don't work like that. Anything and everything is possible for mankind. Human beings create their own reality, and we have to create a new one here in the Northwest. The Northwest martyr Edgar Steele always used to close his nickel rants with New America, an idea whose time has come. I got a better idea, Ed. End America, an idea whose time has come. Every other continent on the face of the earth has many countries on it, and eventually so will our continent. That's just the way it's going to work out. That's the way human nature will shape this up. A century from now, North America will be almost like the old South Africa with Bantustans. The Southwest, from Southern California to Texas, will be Aztlan. There will be a Republic of New Africa in what is now the South, unless the Hispanics push in from Aztlan and kill or enslave all the niggers, which they may well do like they've done in other places like Brazil and Central America. You know, the lot of blacks in a brown society is actually not very pleasant. There may be some remnants of the old United States left in the Midwest and the Northeastern Corridor, in theory ruled over by some decrepit remnant of the Washington, D.C. government, but in fact they'll be independent. And there will be a Northwest American Republic for white people only in the states of Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Western Montana, and with any luck, bits and pieces of Northern California, British Columbia, Alberta, and Alaska. Our Northwest Republic will be there 100 years from now because we're going to make it so. Now, right now, the Northwest Front is sifting, sifting, sifting like a prospector panning a stream, looking for that little bit of color in the bottom of the pan. A large part of the people that we are sifting are going to be conservatives connected to the Tea Party movement, or maybe not, but like the Marines, we're looking for a few good men and women. Men and women who still have a few brain cells to rub together. And who can see that despite all the Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh crap, the old America is gone forever, and we have to start over. We will be sifting through hundreds of batches of contacts and keeping and nurturing two or three out of each batch who seem to have a little bit of character and a glimmer of understanding. All I can do is keep on begging you white folks out there to look in that mirror. And if you don't like what you see, then don't turn away. You know what you have to do. It's not that you can't do it. It's that you won't do it. But you can change that. The road is open for you to be a man again. The road of courage and self-worth, of pride and honor, and eventually of glory, lies open for you just as much as it ever lay open for any Aryan man since the dawn of time. It's the road northwest.
Calling all the clans together, calling all the clans together, calling all the clans together, brothers come a running. Calling south and north together, calling west and east together, calling all the clans together, brother come a running. Be a bit of sleeping, can't afford to be a bit of sleeping. Can't you see the reaper reaping? Brothers come a running. Never mind the shells are flying, never mind the dead and dying. Can't you hear the piper piping? Brother come a running. Come a running fast, come a running hard, running for all you worth. Come a running through the gates of hell itself, and let the devil take the hindmost.
We're gonna be
calling all the clan together,